Welcome to Social Work Calling, the podcast of Union University's School of Social Work. In this episode, alumni Hope Haynes, Haley Coble, and Ryan Massey discuss their work in recovery courts, exploring their journey to social work, the role of recovery courts, and how faith intersects with their careers. They share the challenges and rewards of helping clients overcome addiction, the importance of setting boundaries, and addressing misconceptions about addiction. The episode wraps up with advice for future social workers on being open to diverse roles and continuous learning. Let's get started. Hello, everyone. Welcome back into the Union University School of Social Work podcast called Social Work Calling. And today we have three of our alumni with us to talk about recovery court. So we have Hope, Haley, and Ryan, and I'm going to have them introduce themselves in just a minute and tell you what they do, their job title, what years they graduated from Union, and they actually all graduated from both our BSW and MSW programs. We'll just go around the room and just what you do and the agency you work for and what year you got your degrees.
My name is Hope Haynes, and I work for the City of Jackson Recovery Court. I'm the clinical case manager, and I graduated with my BSW in 2013 and my MSW in 2014.
I'm Haley Coble, and I got my BSW here at Union in 2011 and my MSW in 2012. I also work for the City of Jackson as the director of the City of Jackson Recovery Court and the newly established Mental Health Court, overseeing both of those, and I'm a licensed clinical social worker.
I am Ryan Massey. I am the Recovery Court Coordinator for the 25th Judicial District Recovery Court, as well as the Fayette County General Sessions Recovery Court. I graduated with my BSW in 2016 and my MSW in 2017.
Thank you all, and thanks for coming on the podcast. So tell me a little bit about the story about how you got into social work and the role that your faith played in that process.
I grew up on the mission field. My parents were missionaries in South Africa, and before that, my dad was a pastor, and I always knew that I wanted to help in some way. I just didn't know the major that would get me to do that. So I looked into occupational therapy. I looked into being a child life specialist, just various things. I think because I was in South Africa, it was a little bit tricky to, I didn't get to visit a lot of colleges early on and things like that. So when I came back the summer before college, got to visit more, learn about the majors and things. And I was between two colleges, and one of them had a social work degree and one of them did not. And the more I learned about social work and how broad it was and how many opportunities I could have, and the fact that I didn't have to know exactly what I wanted to do was really relieving, because it was so broad and you can work in all different kinds of fields. And so I ended up picking Union for the social work degree specifically, and did my first semester freshman year with Intro to Social Work with Dr. Blakely, and loved it.
I initially always just felt a call to want to do some type of ministry. I went to a community college for the first 2 years. I just didn't really know what that looked like and was trying to figure that out and thinking through what I wanted to do and where I wanted to work. I didn't know if it would be overseas or, like what Hope said, just that specific job that I was going to have. I just knew I really wanted to help people and show them the love of Jesus and find a avenue to do that. And I feel like my mom, I think she was looking one day, we were thinking where I was going to finish out the rest of my college, and she found social work and Union, and she was like, this set of skills and knowledge base seems like exactly what you're talking about, what you want to do, but in a practical way to be able to have a job maybe in the mission field or in a whatever it is that you want to do. And so it was truly the Lord, and my mom was just looking it up, and I was like, that sounds exactly like something that I would want to do. So I really had no idea of what social work was. I didn't really even know about Union, but I feel like that was definitely the Lord leading me here to get me to Union and in social work specifically, because it was such a good avenue in various jobs that you could have. And so that's how I got here.
I have a very different experience. I did not come to Union to do social work. I came to be an eye doctor, actually. Mm-hmm. And so freshman year, first semester, I was nearly failing two classes. I guess that's what prompted me to begin questioning what I really wanted to do, because I was struggling a lot the first semester with my classes. And it was not because of lack of effort. I almost wish it was because of lack of effort. But I was not skilled in that way. And my second semester, I just started taking some random classes just to see what I might be interested in. And one of those was Intro to Social Work with Donald Jordan. And it was one he really would advocate for the class and the profession. And so that was his goal by the end of the class, was to sell you on social work. And he did a very good job, because I was very interested after that class. I wasn't fully committed, but I was very interested. And after I took intro, I took an experience class. I took that class and was able to try it out in some different fields or different areas of work. And after that, I was very interested and switched my major to social work.
Believe it or not, Ryan, you're actually the more typical case. One of the things that we've noticed is at the beginning of a freshman year, we have a small number of social work majors. But during the year, we have about double that changed their major to social work. So Hope and Haley, you guys are actually the exception. Most people don't come to us ready and know that they're ready for social work. It's usually a process that happens under those first 2 years. So I'm sure you would have been a great eye doctor, Ryan, by the way. Math and science classes.
You do not want me to be your eye doctor.
How much math could be involved, right?
Like, yeah. That's what I thought.
All right, talk to me a little bit about your time at Union. You've already mentioned like the intro class experiences and how those were confirmation or beginning of confirmation about social work being right for you. But just how did our programs, both BSW and MSW, help develop you as a social worker, prepare you for the work you do now? And how did the programs challenge you, if they did at all, in your faith and your walk with the Lord?
I think for me, one of the most important things that stand out was the professors and the care that I felt from the professors in knowing who I was specifically and about my life, and not just paying attention to me when I was sitting in their classroom, but really knew me and know me now, and I think follow our successes and celebrate with us. And that always, it still feels very impactful, and it feels like my family, my little social work family. I think that was the most impactful for me in my social work profession and learning about that, and also just personally and with my relationship with the Lord. And I knew that any professor would pray with me if I needed them to. I had a medical thing in college, and everyone was gracious and took time and understood. That understanding and that extra care, I think, goes a long way. And I knew that what they were saying about empathy and compassion towards clients, they were practicing with us, and it felt genuine.
Yeah, I think for me, thinking through that question was a lot of the same. Social work felt like a little family away from my family. College in and of itself is just a time to really live out, make those decisions for yourself and become independent. And so I think through just my time at Union in general, of how the Lord shaped me, and really I'm thankful for the foundation that my parents laid, but then you're coming here, you're in college, and to live that out, because it's your own faith and your own choices. And I think that the social work program and even my teachers, like Hope said, just having teachers who care about you that love the Lord, that are talking about those things in their classes, really just helped solidify and even grow that foundation even further for me. So my time at Union specifically, and then even in the social work program, and I think it opened my eyes just being in the MSW and BSW program to so many things that I probably just had never been exposed to in my life and had not experienced. And further, I feel like confirmed that, wow, there is a world of hurting people and different populations and all sorts of things going on that I just really probably was naive to, that further confirmed that I just wanted to really come alongside them and help that. And our social work teachers just gave us and the program, just practical skills and care and concern to really be able to do that. So it was, I think, foundational, just those years at Union that I was here, to help me in that and growing in my faith.
In terms of my personal and professional growth, I think that Union and their programs challenged me academically, but also gave me opportunities to experience social work in different capacities, which I think was probably, especially if you come into the field and you don't really know what you're wanting to do with it, you weren't even planning on doing it to begin with. Having the opportunity to experience it in different capacities, to learn what it is that you might be called to do. It's one thing to be called to social work, but then there's so many varieties of that. And so I had those opportunities. And then also just like the feedback that you would get from your professors, the classes that you would do with your experience classes, feedback from students, and then also from like field supervisors and things like that. I think those were very foundational in me becoming who I am as a social worker. And then in terms of my faith, Union provided an environment for me to grow. You have the community there. I think that my time at Union was really, one, I had a lot of personal challenging things going on in my life. So that was difficult. But then I'm here in this environment with people that care and provide you room to grow. And I really found myself in a place where I was faced with what you were saying, Haley, about owning your faith, especially in those trying times where maybe you've walked with some great people who had strong faith, and then you're here and you're going through your own struggles. And I just felt myself in a place where I was met with, you either choose to walk forward in your own faith or you won't. And so I think that my time at Union was me committing myself to that, going forward, walking with my own faith.
It sounds like the School of Social Work were supportive to you all. That's good to hear that we do care for our students and do try to get to know you outside the classroom. When you first started the social work program, could you ever imagine that you would work in recovery court?
I think this might be similar for all of us. No, this was not on my radar at all. I think, like I said earlier, I was envisioning maybe working in a hospital setting, definitely with children. And so when I went to do my internship, and the option to interview with Recovery Court was presented, I think by that time, going back to the previous question, I think I trusted you guys, I trusted my professors and where they said to interview with. So I went to the Recovery Court interview and just, I think I just knew, I was like, yep, this is it. And then interned, loved it, wanted to work there immediately, but there wasn't a position at that time. But yeah, I can't imagine working other places, and I've been there almost 10 years now, and yeah, I didn't think I'd work with adults, definitely not in the substance abuse or substance use population, criminal justice, none of that was on my radar at all.
Yeah, same for me. I, like Hope said, I was so thankful that I ended up in a internship at Recovery Court, because it literally set the whole trajectory for where I am now. I've been my whole entire professional adult career at Recovery Court, and I'm so thankful for that. I never envisioned being at Recovery Court. I thought maybe work with elderly population or doing something like that. I didn't really know what that would entail, but I'm so thankful. It's the same. I had that interview and trusted my teachers. They sent me on a couple different interviews, and after meeting with the Recovery Court staff, I was like, wow, this is interesting. The people, I want to work here, I want to be a part of this ministry and what they're doing. And then was offered a position upon graduating. Someone did happen to leave, and so I started working there in 2012, right after I finished my master's degree. And so that was really exciting to be passionate about that, have that year and that internship, and then get started with my professional career there, and still there today. So yeah.
So, no, I also did not envision myself, and in fact, avoided this area of work. And so I did interviewing for your master's level internship. We were instructed to do 3 interviews, and I had 3 set up, and one was with the City of Jackson Recovery Court. And I remember I was newly married. I was leaving the apartment to go to my interview, and I'm like, this is a waste of time. I don't want to do this one, mostly not because of them, but because in my undergrad, somebody had done their internship there, and we talk about all the experiences in our classes, so I thought I'd already learned about that area. And so I begrudgingly went, and I don't remember if it was both of you or just Hope. I remember Hope being there, but I don't know if it was both of you or not. But I remember leaving and was like, now I don't want to go to my other interviews because I know this is exactly where I need to be. And so it wasn't really like after that interview, I knew exactly, like, that's exactly what I wanted to do with my life. Right. But for that year, I wanted to be there. But definitely after I spent the semester or year there, I was certain that's what I wanted to do.
Talk to us a little bit about what Recovery Court is. I think most people probably do not know. We've just been using the term Recovery Court. So talk a little bit about that, how that approach is different from the traditional criminal justice setup, and what unique role do you feel like social workers play in this setting?
I would say how Recovery Court is different than the traditional criminal justice setting. I would say it has the same purpose. Like, the whole goal of it is to promote public safety. That's what the general criminal justice system is wanting to do, and that's also what this program is wanting to do. But I think the way in which we go about it have some slight differences. And so I think what's unique to Recovery Corps is the collaborative approach. So we have treatment teams who are making all these decisions from different professions, from the judge to the district attorney's office to the defense attorneys, case managers, treatment providers, and coordinators. All of us are coming together to make these decisions with one individualized treatment plan for these participants. And so that's another unique aspect of it, is the individualized plan for them. It's not just one size fits all, or like, you get these charges, so these are your options. There's a variety of options. And then the other part, I would say, intense case management. If you're in the general criminal justice system, you might get some case management, but this is like the main part of Recovery Corps, I would say. For the length of time you're there, you are getting very intense case management. And then the immediacy of the responses. Everybody's heard that the wheels of justice turn slowly. And with Recovery Corps, I think that's one of the major differences, is that a response to either desired behavior or undesirable behavior, there is a response within a week or two. Whereas in the regular criminal justice system, that's not happening. It could be months. It could be years, depending on if people don't get caught for way later. They go on the run, they get picked up later on new charges, and it just gets a response way later. And yeah, I think those are the treatment team aspect, the immediacy, and then also just this empathetic response to them, which is seen less in the regular criminal justice system.
Anything I want to add to that?
I would add, like she said, with the therapeutic setting in a courtroom is so unlike anything you would see on a normal day if you walk into city court or any other court going on in Jackson or Madison County. It's a therapeutic approach that even the judge takes, and to have a judge sitting at a bench asking about your week, asking how your baby's doing, asking how your job interview went, is such a different experience than any of our clients have ever had interacting with even that judge specifically or other judges. The majority of their life in a court setting has been, even with the police officers that are in court that day, greeting them with a smile and a wave and a how are you. Their interaction with law enforcement has been very different up until their point in Recovery Court. And so I think that whole aspect of seeing that therapeutic approach to the judicial system, what she mentioned, is what is so different for a lot of our clients, having a judge that cares and staff and people that care about you, not just a case number.
I think the whole view of the criminal justice system being punitive and Recovery Court's main goal is to keep you out of jail is probably one of the biggest things. And like Ryan was explaining, there's still a response to their behavior and maybe a consequence, but it's a real life in that time direct, how is this going to change your behavior? What do you need therapeutically that's going to help you make this a long-term change? And how can we keep you from going back into that really negative environment and treat the problem instead of just going back into jail and back into jail and back into jail and not seeing the change, the public safety change that the community wants and the society wants. It's not working. And so trying something different and offering options and therapy and behavior modification that sometimes isn't enjoyable either. But yeah, I think that's one of the main differences.
So I know you guys have successes because I frequently see them on social media, which is great, because I think in some areas of social work, the successes may not come as often because there may not be as supportive as an environment that you've just described. So talk to me a little bit about the most rewarding moments you've experienced in working in Recovery Court. On the flip side, what are some of the biggest challenges?
I think, like you said, obviously the getting to see them day one, mostly in jail, sometimes at the lowest they've ever been. They've lost everything. They don't maybe have housing. They don't have family support anymore. They've burned a lot of bridges. They don't know what to do. And to see them rebuild bit by bit their life over a year or sometimes longer. And we see them a lot too. So at least 3 to 4 times a week, I would say, they're at our office, we're interacting. And so that is really rewarding, the amount of time that we have with them and getting to know them and seeing their bit by bit, their external changes and their more difficult internal changes, and noticing those personality shifts and making better decisions and all of those things is huge. I think the challenging things I didn't think about when I was going through school, is losing clients, especially with overdose rates the way they are recently. We've lost quite a few, whether they were previous clients or clients currently in our program that had overdosed and passed away. And that's a unique thing. Grief, I think, is difficult anyway, obviously, but there's things in place that kind of give you like a natural, there's a service, there's a time to be with your family, there's all these things. But with a client, you don't necessarily have that. And you also have a group of other clients that are affected by it too, right, and right. their families. And how do you take care of yourself? How do you take care of the group of clients that are grieving that, and all of the things that touches? So I think over the last few years, that has been a unique challenge. And then obviously, when you do spend so much time with your clients over a year period, when there are hard things in their lives, or maybe times where they're really struggling, or they experience a death in their family, or what, it all impacts you as well, and you watch them and struggle through that. And so I think always learning boundaries and personal boundaries, but also like those things as Christians and as human beings should affect you, and they are, and just learning how to manage that and still be healthy for your clients and healthy for yourself, mm-hmm. I think is one of the biggest ones.
I would say the most rewarding part for me, obviously all of what Hope said, but then there's usually just a moment when you look back, maybe it's just like reflecting on the progress that they've made, and then you see whether it be like the parent of the client, you realize they're getting their kid back, or the client themselves are getting their kids back, and you think about their kids getting their parent back. Even in this moment, it's making me emotional. Mm-hmm. It's such a beautiful thing that we get to watch.
Mm. Yeah. Families restored, yeah.
That's what I had written down too, is family testimonies. When our clients graduate, we're able to bring in, we have them invite some of their family members. Sometimes they bring their children. They may bring a mom or a dad, a husband or wife, an aunt, uncle, just people in their life who've seen them on this journey for what has been so many years for most of them. Usually our clients all, their entire lives have been really, the majority of their lives have been in and out of the criminal justice system, and usually on substances, and started at a very young age. So to see a mom sitting next to her son, what Ryan said, talking through, oh, I've been praying and hoping since he was 8 years old that he would get it together, that I would be able to see this day where he had 30 days even substance free, 90 days, something that may seem small to someone else, but is huge to our participants when they've been using substances for the majority of their entire adult and teenage lives, and started at a very young age. So it is a huge deal to celebrate even what may seem like a small success, but it's huge for them, and it really is so huge in just the overall time of the amount of time that they have spent using in a life of destruction, and to see them come from that and their families, like we said, beside them supporting that and feeling like they got their family member back and hugging us and saying thank you is such a rewarding feeling to know we played a small part in that. It was they were the one doing the work, but we set up the opportunity for them to participate in it and being willing to do it. And I think that's the most rewarding part. And then what they mentioned challenging is, yes, the overdoses that we see, dealing with the loss of those clients. And I think sometimes too, seeing the effects of their decisions within their children's lives. Even now, there are clients we have that don't complete the program, that don't finish, that want to go back to jail and just say, this is too hard. I don't even want to finish the program. I'd rather just go back and do my time, because I think it takes a lot of effort to deal with the maybe terrible decisions sometimes that you've made over the majority of your life, and the destruction that a lot of your choices have caused just in your family and in your own life, and the shame and guilt. It's really hard to face that when they come off of substances, and sometimes they aren't able to finish the program and maybe do want to go and serve their time. But I think that's the challenging part, is seeing, no, you have the opportunity, please don't give it up, don't lose it, don't run away, don't give up, keep trying. And I think that's what's so hard, is when you want it sometimes more for them, and that you going to jail or going back to this lifestyle, what it's about to do again to your family, to your children, to the people that love you, and to your own life. And I think that is one of the hardest parts, I think, for me.
So what I'm hearing there is it takes incredible courage on their part to choose to do the recovery part. And that some, that's so painful or so daunting to explore that they're just like, nope, let me just go to jail. Like, that's heartbreaking, right? But that's, I guess, A, addiction, and then B, just the hard part of anybody looking at their own stuff, and particularly if they've hurt people and those kinds of things. So those, for lack of a better word, celebrations I'm seeing on social media, those are like graduation or completion like ceremonies. And so the participants like, yeah, you can post this on social media, and they have their family there. That's just great to be able to see those. All right, thank y'all. Talk to me a little bit about how you sense God working through you in this role. And is there a particular part of your work that feels like a clear calling or mission to you?
A lot of times we get asked, what's your success rate? And we're always a little bit taken aback. I think it's good to have data and success and all of that, but it's hard to define what is success. Did they graduate the program? Did they stay substance free forever when they graduated? Did they not get arrested again? And I think something that we hold on to, or that I hold on to, is that while they were with us, that they felt, and if I can do that for a client during the time in their program, then I feel like that was success for me, because they got to feel the Lord's love through me, that they mattered. And no matter what their life choices are after they graduate, they, I just feel like we validated that they were worth something and worth changing, and paid attention to their dreams and their goals, maybe for the first time. And I think it's most encouraging, and I think validating, when sometimes people don't finish the program. They might get terminated from the program, or choose to, like Haley was saying, quit the program for different reasons. But sometimes those are the ones that call later or show back up, because they trust us and they know that we care about them. And I just talked to someone on the phone yesterday, a previous client, and he just knows that when he was with us, even though it didn't go well, that we really cared about him and that we might want to know how he's doing. And that is just really, like I said, validating for me to know, okay, they felt that care and attention and compassion, and that, I think, is my biggest goal.
I think, I don't know if there's a particular part of the job that feels like a calling. I think the whole job feels like a calling. Just in the sense of my past, I think the Lord has healed certain aspects of my story and allowed me to go forward and use that in this population. But then what is just evident that the Lord is in this whole story is that it's cyclical. I get into this and I'm serving these other people because he's healed me, which in turn heals them. And then more parts of me continue to get healed by seeing their restoration. And so just being able to see that is an obvious evidence that God is present.
I think for me, it does feel like a clear calling and mission for me in the work that I do. I find my work at Recovery Court deeply fulfilling. My first role now is a believer, a wife, and a mom. And so those are the roles right now that I'm really focusing a lot of my time on in my life. But even a lot of those areas display or overflow into my work with my Recovery Court clients. And the mission that I feel with them is hopefully making Jackson a safer and better place, and investing in the lives of our clients for their families too. Being a mom now has shown so much, even just more compassion for our clients and their families and the role that they play in their children's lives and how vital it is. And so being a part of them getting their lives on track, whether they have kids or not, but hopefully just changing the trajectory of individuals, families, and communities is so important to me. And to come alongside people who feel like they've lost all hope, I think, and to show them the love of Christ and that there is redemption in that. There, God can use your story. God can change you. He can use the scars and the decisions that you've made and the hurt that's been done to you to create a beautiful story if you will let him, and hopefully impact other people with their stories when they change. It's exciting to be a part of that.
All right, so a related question to that, is there a specific moment from your work you can point to where you clearly saw God's hand, whether it's in your own personal growth or in the life of someone you've helped in Recovery Court? You've touched on that a little bit, but I just want to see if there were other moments there you wanted to mention.
I think for me, there is one client that stands out who's been in our lives for a really long time. He celebrated 9 years substance-free this past weekend, and I remember so many times praying for him and with him. The Lord started revealing himself to this client in so many interesting and unique ways, and he had so many questions about the Lord and about faith and what does it mean to be a Christian. The most simple questions, to go back to truly the basics that he had the most limited understanding, and to be able to walk alongside him in that and answer those questions for him and pray for him. He ended up getting saved in our program, like kneeled in our lobby, I guess our office floor, and prayed to receive the Lord. And I think back on that time, like how we were able to be a part of his story. And even now, he's the biggest encouragement to us. He comes up and brings us Bible verses, and he'll say, have you read your Bible today? Have you prayed today? And so I'm like, he's holding us accountable on this end. He'll come by and leave little verses or little things like that. And so to be a part of his story and him celebrating 9 years, he's been part of my recovery court journey for almost as long as I've been there, and that he's still doing well and trying to live as best he knows how for the Lord, and the changes that I've seen in his life. I think that's like the thing that sticks out the most is with him. He's very special.
That's awesome. There's often a delicate balance between justice and mercy in a court setting. And as you mentioned earlier, the main goal there is public safety. How has your faith guided you in reconciling the relationship between, or the tension between, justice and mercy in the work you do?
I think a lot of times when we actually interview interns, this comes up in talking about what we learned in our classes in school. I think, obviously, in the social work program, compassion and empathy is the main focus and pushed hard. And I think sometimes we don't talk as much about holding people accountable, and we're not always able to in certain social work settings. Sometimes it has to be a little bit more delicate, come at it around, beat around the bush a little bit to get the client to see it for themselves. And in recovery court, it's a lot more direct. And I never imagined that would be something that I enjoyed or wanted to do, if that makes sense. We are a big chunk of my job is in making sure that our participants did what they were supposed to that week. And if not, we meet with our treatment team and we come up with a consequence. And so a lot of behavior modification, very direct, you did not do this, you were supposed to, why didn't you? And let's do this next time and grow from that. And here's the consequence to further enforce that. And I always joke that when I first started and I was an intern, we would have treatment team and we'd be discussing maybe even a jail sanction sometimes. And I would cry in treatment team because I was doing this to a client and they were going to be mad at me. But what I've learned over the years is that is so important, that the justice piece, and not just the mercy, but there is both. They, like I talked about earlier, the care and the attention that we give them paired with the sometimes hard discussions of why are you making these decisions continuously, it is a hard balance. And I think sometimes they don't see the mercy side of it, and sometimes they get really frustrated with us and they're like, you're just out to get me. But I think eventually, especially at the beginning, when they don't necessarily trust us, they don't know who we are, they don't know if they can trust our word and if we're gonna do what we say we're gonna do. But over time, I think they're like, oh, and looking back, I see the point of that now. And that really was love. You really cared for me. No one's ever done this for me in my life. And so I think it's awesome. I think it's a blessing that we get to be that straightforward and point out, but also using their own, you want to graduate this program, this is a goal for your life, you want to change this and this, is this decision getting you there, and helping them see those things and further enforcing that, and just the accountability and the structure, I think it's just really cool and really unique.
I can see how that would be difficult, like coming to grips with the fact that what might be merciful to them is to actually have them face the consequence, because mm-hmm. it's going to move them further along their recovery and get them where they need to be and wake up. In looking at addiction, even though addiction is addressed in the diagnostic and statistical manuals of mental disorders, and that we know that there is a mental health component to addiction, I think society sees it a little different from time to time. What do you think are some of the biggest misconceptions about addiction that the general public or even the professionals have?
The first thing that comes to mind for me is just
maybe that they're just bad people. Sometimes I think that if you're involved in the criminal justice system and you have this long history and track record and you're doing these things, that maybe you're just a bad person. And I think when we see them as a hurt person, it really changes that lens of who we're dealing with. It doesn't mean that they haven't made poor choices and that they haven't had played a part in where they're here today, and to be held accountable for that and know how their decisions have affected them. But when you see an adult sitting here telling you about when they were 8 years old, how their mother's the first person that ever gave them substances, how their parent was the first one that ever violated that trust with them and didn't keep them safe when they were supposed to, I think it changes the lens in which you see how they got to where they are today, and humanizing their experience as a child and as a teenager and some of those things and the part that they played in it. A lot of them know that, but when you really dig back to it, some of the hurt that's been done to them and the brokenness that's there, it is really tough. And so I think seeing them, the hurt and the trauma that needs to be dealt with and healed, can take a long time, but that you see them as that little 8-year-old thinking like, oh my goodness, okay, some as early as 7 that they started using, and maybe it was a parent, like we said, a family member, a friend. It changes how you see them and gives you a little more empathy into how they got to where they are today.
I think a common one that I hear is that they did this to themselves, which kind of goes along the same line of thinking that you were just explaining, that it's just so much more complex than that. Of course, people know that using substances could lead to an addiction, but it's way more nuanced than just knowing that it could have a bad effect on your health. You even think about like cigarette smoking. People know that's bad for your health, or eating certain kinds of food, it's bad for your health, but people continue to do it. It's just so much more, there's so much more that goes into it. And same thing on the flip side of treating it, there's so much more that goes into it. All those different aspects you have to figure out and then treat it. And then another one that I don't know that people say this out loud, but I think as professionals, our behavior acts this way after somebody goes to treatment and they come back. They should be healed, right? Like, they did the treatment. That could be our whole entire program. They do the inpatient treatment, the outpatient, the mental health, medication-assisted treatment, all the things. They should be fixed by now. And it's, again, so much more complex than that.
Lifelong. Yeah, and you look at our own lives and the problems that we continue to struggle with throughout the time. And back to that thing about success, it's like, this year where they had this time of healing and growth and life change, if they relapse after the program or whatever happens, it doesn't discount all of that good that they did during that year and gave back to their community and their families and made positive memories, and maybe later they can build off of that. I don't know. I think it's funny that happens when we know that in our own lives we go back to things and make similar mistakes and struggle with things. It's just that addiction often just has such a bigger consequence and it's a lot more visible. And so it just seems a little unfair.
Yeah, I think of the end of Romans chapter 7 where Paul's talking about the good that I want to do, I can't do, and the things I don't want to do, I find myself doing. And I think as Christians, just understanding that, how that's true for us, helps us to have a little bit more empathy for those going through this. So would you say that the majority of clients that you see are in fact using substances as a way to self-medicate other mental health challenges or to heal trauma, those kinds of things?
Yes, for the most part. And I was going back to the last question you asked too. I think a lot of times misconceptions that people have, but I think clients sometimes believe this about themselves, that maybe they don't deserve a chance, that they don't deserve to heal, that I'm way too far gone. And I have this verse posted in my office, but it's, so whoever is in Christ is a new creation. The old things have passed. Behold, new things have come. In 2 Corinthians, and I think about that for them, like you do deserve good things. There is forgiveness in that, and you can write some of these things. But I think the misconceptions a lot of people have, they often feel that about themselves too, that they don't deserve it, and there's no healing in that. But I think, yes, like you said, they're healing from something usually and trying to cope with a lot of those things that happened in their life and the mental health issues that they're experiencing.
And we just talked about mental health because we're talking about self-medicating. I hear rumors or rumblings within the School of Social Work, just talking to other professors, that there is a mental health court in development. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, our contract just went live on September 1st, so we're in the implementation phase right now. We're hiring some new staff, getting getting our treatment team together and kind of program structure and figuring out. It's very similar to recovery court in that aspect. It's a program in lieu of jail time, so they'll come in and it addresses different things, different target population. It'll be for individuals with persistent and severe mental health concerns that are in the criminal justice system, and really focus on medication management, supportive services, and that intensive case management and treatment piece like we see in recovery court. So we're really excited about that. We're hoping to take our first client by January 1st. So I'm like, oh, it's quickly approaching, but I think is much needed in our community, much needed in our criminal justice system and city court. They had a track that was very similar to that before COVID happened and wasn't able to be sustained throughout COVID. And so now it's going to be reestablished. There will be a state certification along with it through the Department of Mental Health and Substance Abuse Services, which is what our recovery court is funded through. And then we'll be a certified state mental health court. So we're so excited.
That is exciting. That's wonderful. All right, so let's get into a little bit about advice to wrap up here. Talk a little bit about what advice you would have for someone thinking about social work. And also part of that, second part of that question is maybe that student that may be at the stage that you all were in where, let's say, Professor Swint, who's our field director now, mentions, hey, what about recovery court as an option? And they might be, I'm not sure about that. So a couple of pieces of advice there. What would you say to those considering social work and those thinking about maybe working with those in recovery?
Just be open-minded. You never know what the Lord is going to lead you to. I would just say give everything a chance, even if you have your mind made up. Go and try to interview at multiple places. Trust your teachers. They usually know you and see where some of your strengths would be or areas of interest that you may not even be aware of. But I think just being open-minded to that.
My advice overall is that drugs and alcohol appear in every part of social work. And I think the more education you can get on that specific problem or population, it will benefit you no matter what you do. I worked for a different company in between my internship and then coming back to work for recovery court for almost a year, and worked with teenagers that were having behavior issues in the home. And I had a little bit of knowledge from my internship, but I think it would have greatly benefited me to know more, to know what I was looking for in the homes, warning signs of substance use. Just, I think, educating yourself. And if there's, I know that there's courses in your program, take advantage of those and really learn, because it really is hospital settings, school settings, other medical settings, anything. You're gonna come across substance use, and it's a big deal. And if you don't, I think if you're unaware of that, it's going to be really hard to help people.
I'm going to say something along the same lines of educating yourself, taking advantage of what is being taught to you while you're in such a great environment. Because I think, obviously, if you're coming into the social work field, you have a passion for helping people, which is very much needed. But when you get out into the real world and start working, especially if you're working in collaboration with other professionals, I think social work has a bad rap for being just like a feel-good profession. And it's way more than that. But unless you educate yourself, take advantage of what is being taught to you, it is just a feel-good thing. But it's so much more. Like, all of our treatment is evidence-based. We're not just making it up as we go. Our decisions in treatment teams are not based on how we feel, but on the best practice standards of recovery courts. And yeah, anytime I have an intern, that is what I want them to know, is that you need to learn and you need to keep learning even after you graduate, because evidence-based practices change. So you need to care about learning.
It made me laugh on the podcast you sent us, on the one you did before this, about not worrying about getting the A. I'm like, that was me. All I cared about was getting an A. Like, that's what I wanted. And if I could go back and do it again, I would focus so much more on the content and not just focusing on my grades so much. It's important, but I think I missed a lot of practical learning and application just focusing on making sure it was done right.
So that's great advice. Any other tips you would have for students either starting the, and they're very different experiences, right? The BSW and the MSW program, different experiences, even though you may have some of the same professors, but advice you would have for students that are starting a BSW or MSW program?
Only thing I can think of is just, you're going to do way more writing in your MSW And that would be, I'd be practicing my writing skills in my BSW so that when you get into your MSW, you're not learning to be a good writer then.
Yeah, we're trying to reduce the number of papers. Plus AI is making it more challenging to even learn what people know or how they say things. So yeah, I know that the state of Tennessee has this the whole faith-based through the Department of Mental Health and Substance Abuse. Could y'all talk about that a little bit and like how you all maybe interact with that or that has an effect on what you do in recovery court?
The main thing that I know about it is that they work with local congregations. Mm-hmm. And so people can be certified as like a recovery church. And so if people, I just know there is one church in our district, at least one church, there might be more, that is a certified recovery church. And you just know that it's a safe place to send clients if they are interested in using that as like their self-help support. All of our participants are required to be involved in that. In some capacity, they get to choose what capacity that is. And yeah, it just gives, it puts a flag on them of that's a safe place to send people and to partner with them, especially like we have events and things like that and they're good people to partner with.
We utilize one of the churches now, right? They're a certified church that helps, and they come on site and even speak to our clients and share with them. We have a pastor that comes and shares his testimony, and they're one of the certified churches. And so we know, like she said, a good partnership, but they come and invest in our clients, even at our office. So
I think with Celebrate Recovery and things too, that's a great resource. And more churches, I think because of partnerships like this, are doing that. And Ryan said they're able to choose what's most helpful for them in their recovery, whether it's AA or NA or church or Bible studies or Celebrate Recovery. And so, yeah, I like what you said about you just know that church has had the training and the knowledge. They've been given the stamp of approval of we can feel comfortable sending them there if that's something that they say that they want.
And from what I've heard from just hearing from clients and their experience in the church prior to getting in recovery was a negative one. And so sometimes they have a hard time entering back into that environment, even when that's what they really want. Like they want a connection with God and a community of people who also have a connection with God. But it's just not been a good experience for them in the past. And so it makes it difficult to enter into that knowing that or thinking that maybe nobody there gets what you're going through. But at a recovery church, that's what their whole thing is. The main thing is the gospel, but then along with that, particularly people going through addiction.
Yeah, that's great. And for those of you that are listening that might be interested more in the faith-based initiatives, I'll put a link in the show notes. There's a whole certification process that faith communities, churches can go through to be listed as a resource. If somebody's in an area, because not every area has a recovery court, correct? Or at least, or do they in Tennessee? I don't know the...
I think in technically...
They're supposed to.
Technically, every county is covered. It makes it difficult to get to them sometimes. Like, I have the 25th Judicial District, which is 5 counties. You may not live close to an office, and if you don't have transportation, that makes it really difficult. In our counties, we have offices spread out, but there might be other districts where technically the county's covered, but you can't really get to it if you don't have transportation.
So if they're in an area that's underserved or say in a state where maybe there's not a recovery court, how can citizens like make that happen? Is it talking to local judges, talking to district attorneys? What would you advise there for making that happen?
Yeah, the director of the Office of Criminal Justice Services, Rebecca Emmons, she is a graduate from here as well. And so they are starting recovery courts, I think, and open to that. If there are judges or communities who are looking into that, I think they would be more than happy to come alongside and see if it's something they can support and certify and fund. Yeah, if somebody's wanting that.
All right. Hope, Haley, Ryan, thank you all so much for coming on and sharing your stories.
Thank you.
And y'all have a good rest of your day.
Thank you.
We're done.
Thank you for listening to Social Work Calling, a podcast of the Union University School of Social Work. If you'd like more information about our programs, you can visit us at uu.edu/social work. That's uu.edu/social work. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.